So I want to introduce Philip. He is my mentor teacher, and I love him to death. I'll tell you the corporate side first, which is this, you know, he left a career in the midst of his career as an editor with Esquire magazine. He left that career and came into Vipassana practice and ultimately became a Dharma teacher. He's been teaching, I guess it's almost 40 years here, sometime around 80, sometime in the 90s is when he first became a teacher. I can't remember the exact time, but he's been teaching for quite a while. He's a senior teacher at IMS, Insight Meditation Society, and at Spirit Rock. And I think he's still, I think you're still a guiding teacher at Spirit Rock. I'm not sure. A co-guiding teacher. He's written several books. I love the book Dancing with Life. It's a really great book for understanding how suffering is in our life and the Four Noble Truths. There's emotional chaos to clarity, and then a book around nine bodies for those of us that practice in that lineage also. Anyway, Philip's been coming to Seattle Insight doing these non-residentials for a number of years, and I used to sit with him every time in the back, just sitting there. And now that he's my mentor teacher, I want to tell you the other side of Philip, which is the teaching side. It's so steeped in wisdom. It took a while for me to really grasp that you listen to Philip from a different place. You listen from not trying to figure out what he's saying and just hearing the words, because he's speaking to a deeper part of us, I think. He has a depth of understanding, both from his world that he's lived in and this his own practice. Is one of the few teachers that I feel like practice with something before they teach it. And so I suspect, you know, just from the time I've been with him, many of you have sat with him, but I know there are many of you on this call who have never sat with Philip. And so just from the limited time, I want to share about my practice time with Philip, that if you take the time for this weekend to let go of other stuff and just be in this retreat space together with us, I think you're going to find that Philip can help you come to understand stillness and movement in a way that you may not have known it before. So with that, I would like to turn this over to Philip, and I'll be here supporting Philip and you in whatever way that you need help with. All right. So welcome. Thank you very much. Thank you very much for being here, Philip. I'm going to ask the tech person to spotlight you, Philip, but people can put it on gallery view if you'd rather have if you'd rather see the whole space.
I would rather just let everybody choose for themselves. All right. So right now, sometimes I do that. Sometimes I don't want to be spotlighted to myself. So
okay, I can handle that.
Thank you, Tuere, and thank you, Steve, and thank you, Cheryl, for being here and tech for support. This has been a number of years that I have been here at Sims. Now we're doing it remotely. This is the remote Sims, the cloud Sims, whatever we would imagine it to be. But it's still with the orientation of community that we practice together, and that that each of us is supporting everyone else's practice. And it truly works that way, that our sometimes the momentum of someone else or the whole group is what carries us forward while we stay with. And it we acknowledge that that by others caring about their own liberation from suffering, that this is legitimate as a goal, that it's a possible goal, and that there's numerous people around the globe who employ this as a means to find more freedom in their life. Freedom from what? Greed, from aversion, and from the deluded mind. So I welcome each of you in this way. I miss being in person with you because I've had such wonderful experiences there in various locations in Seattle with you. We're going to start. I'm going to say the refuges and then just refer to the precepts. The refuges are taking refuge in the Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha. And we do this wherever we are and on retreat and off the retreat insofar as it's useful to us. It is not a belief. It's not a kind of a statement that you would find in other religions that are belief-based, but rather it is an orientation of our mind that is in a larger context than just the ego's personality and its wanting to manage. It's saying there are things that are larger than we can handle without holding a larger view other than just the mind that's untrained. And so that is what we do with this. And we do, in doing so, we honor our tradition and we honor those who have gone before us. So you're welcome to say this with me with your sound off, or you don't have to. You can relate to this however you like. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Buddham saranam gacchami. Dhammam saranam gacchami. Sangham saranam gacchami. Dutiyampi Buddham saranam gacchami. Dutiyampi Dhammam saranam gacchami. Dutiyampi Sangham saranam gacchami. Tatiyampi Buddham saranam gacchami. Tatiyampi Dhammam saranam gacchami. Tatiyampi Sangham saranam gacchami. So in taking refuge in the Buddha, we take refuge in the historical Buddha and this capacity, sometimes referred to as Buddha nature, that we all have to change our relationship to experience, to have a whole other relationship with experience that you can imagine it coming in degrees, as typical in the Theravadan tradition. You can imagine it coming in all of these ways that it's slowly accumulating and it breaks open. Lots of different ways to think about them. What I will do sometimes with restless mind is I will take refuge in one of these threes with restless mind, or if there's something that I can't let loose of. Dhamma is the truth of things, the Buddhist truth of how it is. We're in the Theravadan tradition, we're very interested in the nature of nature and the nature of mind. And then a Sangha is the community of practitioners, the fourfold community, as it's usually referred to. That would not be modern language for that, but it's lay and monastic the community combined is what's when they refer to fourfold, that's what they mean. It's just traditional phrasing of it from long ago. And so then you can also look and you can look on the homepage or just from your own reflection, think about what precepts you want to follow during this retreat. So what is it that you're honoring during this retreat? For instance, I think everyone would understand this, even though you're at home, this would not be a 3 days to be drinking alcohol or taking any kind of substance that would cloud the mind, because we're clearing the mind during this time. That's a simple example of that. But also, what is your relationship to silence during this retreat? We're very realistic about being at home, and you do have to be supportive to those at home. So what is silence for you, and so forth, in a home practice? And we can learn from practicing at home together and the ways we wish to be when we're doing home practice with ourselves or with our Dharma buddy or just two or three people, all of which I encourage is that you get in the habit of at least once a quarter doing some sort of a home retreat for a half day, a day, a weekend, whatever it might be for you. So and having done the reference to the refuges and precepts, we have entered into the ritual space, the symbolic space, the orientation towards having our hearts and minds open and available. So we're going to have our first sit of the day, and it is a sit where I will take us through what is called arriving, and make the first reference to at least stillness in the earth element, and we'll see how much further I go than that. Today we for sure will explore in depth the earth element and the wind element. Making yourself comfortable. Comfortable is relative. It's not absolute. It's relative to what's possible. And we began to arrive at this retreat, to arrive in this day of practice, to arrive in this very moment, here, now. In this moment, where are we? Here, together? You are here in your space that you're occupying for this purpose of practice. Feel the here-ness. Room temperature, ambient sounds, any smells in the room, flowers or an open window. Here. And when are we here? We are here now. Now, meaning this moment, presence of mindfulness, presence of being is always in the here and the now. Open to the feeling of immediacy. This moment, fleeting, connected to the next and the next, this flow of now. Flow states, which have been celebrated over the last 25 years in the secular practices of the world, we experience in our practice. Bringing mindfulness front and center with Bhazda Ajahn Analio, who taught me this. Bringing mindfulness front and center, we contemplate our aspiration for this sit, for this day, for this retreat, for our lives. And the Four Noble Truths and the Eightfold Path, it's called Wise View. Inspirational, onward leading. You can feel it in the heart space. You can feel it in your belly. Your body as a whole, this aspiration. For a deeper union, a further union with the Dhamma. And then with this being fully present, we tie into, we remember this remembering aspect of mindfulness. Our intention is how we wish to be in relation to practice and as human beings. The value-based approach to life that's here and now, that isn't changing with goals, that's always there. Heartening. When we arrive in our aspiration, we start to feel a kind of groundedness at times. Sometimes we're too restless or too tuned out. So this is intentional. This isn't distracting ourselves, but we're intentionally being in the moment with clear ways of non-harming, of metta, of renunciation. And we become grounded. We start feeling over time a groundedness. Open to resting in, coming to our true home. And with this presence, we turn to the experience of the body. The body as we know it here and now, as an unfolding moment-to-moment experience. Not judging the body or comparing the body. Not commenting on the body. But opening to it as a direct experience. The first of the four satipatthanas, the establishments of mindfulness. We become mindful through being mindful of the body. mindfulness and knowing a body become one. The body feels like this. If you will, please, I would ask that you just for a moment say silently to the body, thank you, body. Thank you. It does so much. So this embodied awareness has a home. It endures like the earth itself. So many insults, never ceases, is a wonder of function. From our toes to our brain, a wonder. Thank you, body. Now drop your attention to the lower half of the body. Feel the pelvis, the pelvic bowl, the sit bones, the pubic bone, what is the experience feeling through skin, flesh, to bone? Earth element is revealed, hard, firm, heavy. Feel through. Just gentle with your attention. The heaviness is right there. Hardness, firmness, different words because people have different experiences. So we have a number of words to capture that experience so that you can trust the experience as you are knowing it, not wondering, is this it? The answer is yes, this is it. Whatever it is that you experience it, how you experience it. Earth element, earth element. And then the femur bones, the upper leg bones, fitting there in the hip socket of the pelvic bowl, all the way down to the knees and making up part of a knee through flesh, through skin, through flesh, these upper bones in the legs, hard, firm, heavy. Heavy here and now. This body, this moment, earth element, earth element. The two lower leg bones from the lower part of the knee down to the ankle. Through skin, through flesh. The weight, the presence of earth element in the body being known through these particular bones here, now, earth element, hard, firm, heavy. The ankle as a whole and all of the bones in the feet. So, so many bones in the feet. My goodness. Hard, firm, heavy. Earth element, earth element. All the bones in the toes. Hard, firm, heavy. The lower half of the body, when felt beyond skin, beyond flesh, to the bones, that which makes up the earth element in the body, the lower half of the body, hard, firm, heavy earth element. If you will, please, invite the earth element in the body to rest on Mother Earth. You may experience the consequence of that is that the breath is easier felt in the lower abdomen, or there's a release in the spine, particularly the lower spine, or a sense of groundedness, a sense maybe of heaviness, or just firmness, an ease through the nervous system. Earth element resting on earth. Earth element thus supported. We call this relationship gravity. But so often we don't trust it. Out of habit or lack of consciousness, we're hovering or pushing. Just being. And feel the earth element in the upper part of the body. The shoulders, and the upper arms, the elbows. Hard, firm, heavy. Weight underside. The lower arm bones, the bones in the wrists and the hands, weight underside, allowing the earth element to rest on earth in its hardness, its firmness, its heaviness. You might feel this as the upper spine relaxing, or the chest more able to move, the ribs able to respond to breath. There might be a relaxation in the jaw. You become aware of the way the earth element in the skull is resting on the support of the neck, the spine, the upper spine. Bringing mindfulness to this experience of earth element. What do we discover? that the earth element has a relative stillness. It's not dead still. But it is grounded. And the mind can therefore recognize this is the felt sense of stillness. This is the felt sense that is part of the human experience. Oh, I get it. There's an ease of earth element resting on earth. So the stillness has a kind of ease. Through the earth element, we start to experience what it's like for the mind to be grounded. The earth element rests on earth. This is the mind at rest, at ease, resting. This is what stillness felt feels like. It's the felt sense. It's not a concept, but descriptions of an actual experience, however you are experiencing it. As you become more familiar with the stillness of the earth element, you will in time be able to invite the stillness, the sense of groundedness, to emerge from any object, experience of any object that arises in the mind. With the stillness of the earth element, as our object, we then incline the mind, direct attention towards, open to the experience of the wind element. We call the wind element, when it manifests in the body, breath. Its characteristic is movement. Its chief characteristic is movement. That movement may be felt in this moment as tingling, vibration, pressure. It can come as a movement of rising and falling, expanding, contracting, when it's felt through the breath. So much other movement in the body that can also be followed, including things like the cranial sacral rhythm, the flow of lymph. But for now, this very breath, this inhale, is being known by its presence of movement. This very exhale when there's a pause between inhale and exhale, or exhale and inhale, which for some people is quite extended and others very brief, sometimes not really noticeable, that pause is a stillness. If it's recognized as stillness, you're much less likely to get lost. For that pause often throws people when they're using the breath as their anchor object in meditation. But it's so rich because of the contrast with the movement, the stillness, if we learn to experience life, all of our sensory experience, in the added dimension of stillness and movement. Whether you follow the breath at the belly, or the chest, or the tip of the nostrils, right above the upper lip at the opening to the nostrils, or as a whole body movement, like a wave in and out, notice this movement. The ribs responding, the breastbone responding. It's responding to the pressure of the movement. Any tingling that's with it, any vibratory feeling that's with it. You can say to yourself, this is movement. This is the felt sense of movement in the body. Over time, you will learn to automatically notice movement in all experience through any sense gate, including the mind itself. It may come into the thinking ways, remembering, planning. And the content becomes less controlling as you more and more recognize it as movement. Just movement. For these next couple of minutes, just let the mind rest, be grounded in the stillness of the earth element when the mind is inclined to notice the body as a whole, and grounded in movement when breath is predominant. So body breath. For some of you with so much retreat experience, you may be solidly in the breath. Then notice the groundedness of continuity of attention on breath. It is grounding. Just like the earth element in the earth. This is a mystery to be explored later. Just do this. Stillness and movement. This is our adventure for the next 3 days for most of us, and some of you just for today. I'm very aware that in either instance, we're all going to come away with a richer experience of the felt sense of stillness and movement. And also of the fire element and the water element. although for most of our practice experience, the felt sense of earth and wind are the most utilized, most useful, in my view, of these basic elements. So we will have a felt sense unfolding of movement as it is experienced in both the body and the mind. And we will learn how that in noticing that we have choice around the mind moving. So oftentimes we feel like we don't have any choice. We feel subject to the whims of the unfolding experience. And likewise, we will have this felt sense, which we really know for ourselves, of what it feels like to us, that we can recognize it, that we can relate to it wisely in regards to stillness. And we'll see that stillness is got such a rich role in sati and mindfulness and in knowing in general. And we start to see that the combination of stillness and movement is what's sort of leading us around to the way we're relating to the unfolding experience of the moment. And then we're also going to feel both this wonderful phenomena of stillness and movement as one. Really a wonderful experience to get to have, as best we're able. We'll each have our own version of it. And we'll see the stillness and movement that's there in each of the elements. We will, as best we can, we will understand here and now, so that we can, this presence, being mindful in the moment. What is the moment? What is happening in this moment? What's happening phenomenologically is there's a combination of stillness and movement in body and mind, right here, right now, every here, every now. And that gives us a larger view, a more space around our experience, rather than having our face at the window of experience. And if we're lucky, we're going to get to, in that third day, have some experience around contemplating emptiness and opening to knowing of awareness. That may be overly ambitious on my part. It wouldn't be the first time. But nonetheless, I've scheduled it in. I know with those of you who are only here for today that it is important that it be a complete experience within itself. And I've structured this day so that it will get you exposed to these fundamental understandings. And I'll then repeat it again. Some of this again tomorrow, but in a different form for the people who are joining tomorrow that aren't here today. This is from Ajahn Chah, and it's now quite widely quoted. Didn't used to be, but it is now. Try to be mindful and let things take their natural course. Then your mind will become still in any surroundings. Try to be mindful and let things take their natural course. Just be present for experience. So we are both a participant in our experience, which we really value because that's where we get the felt sense, is being the participant. It's happening here and now to this body of consciousness and awareness. And we are also the witness of our own experience. So the participant witness, how do we do that? We do it through stillness. Try to be mindful and let things take their natural course. Natural course is movement, 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 movement. Then your mind will become still. Why? Because you're not interfering. you're with our, we're not interfering from greed or from aversion or from delusion. It's not that they won't arise. It's just that we don't grab hold of them as often for as and grab as intensely and for as long a duration, because it's just the mind moving. Try to be mindful and let things take their natural course. Then your mind will become still in any surroundings like a clear forest pool. All kinds of wonderful rare animals will come to drink at the pool, and you will clearly see the nature of all things. That's the nature of nature. You will see many strange and wonderful things come and go. Movement, movement. But you will be still, still, still. You will see many strange and wonderful things come and go, but you will be still. This is the happiness of the Buddha. This is the happiness of the Buddha. Space around our experience. Stillness in the presence of movement. Not suppressing movement. Not suppressing it. At times, restraining it for purposes of delving deeper into experience. But then that stillness is opening to an inner movement of understanding, a movement to a more subtle of experience of the very thing that we're staying still with. The movement is a much more subtle kind of movement. This is the yin, yang, the wu wei. It's the way it is, the way it is. So this is what we're, this is in a summary way, what we are going to be doing today. We will have, I will do a couple of sits where I, like I did with this one, where I guide us through helping you get more acquainted with this experience so that you learn to guide yourself the way that would be right for you, the way, but once you learn guiding through in this way, and so it'll be a couple sits like that, and then there'll be sits where I will say a few words at the beginning, and then you'll just be working with this on your own, and then there'll be a sit every day, at least one, where you're just, I might read a poem or something, but you're basically self-directing so that you get used to practicing this way so that you can see how useful it is and how you might incorporate it in the ways you now practice. And I would also encourage you to do, if your life circumstances allow it, to do an evening sit or an early morning sit working with stillness and movement also. If you're in a position to do that, I try to create a realistic basic schedule for everyone rather than piling on sits that for some of you just would not be practical because you have duties and you have people that want your attention and so forth. So now we're going to be coming to our walking practice. And in our walking practice, we're also going to be examining the experience of movement and then later stillness. So it's a little different than just feeling the lifting. Moving and placing the way we usually teach it, or sometimes we teach it with breath. But for this retreat, we're developing our access to this knowing of that walking is movement, so that we become so familiar with movement that when the mind starts to, when we're in sitting practice, the mind starts to move around, we don't get so seduced by the content that's what's pulling the mind, whether it's something that's pleasant or unpleasant, because we just say, oh, this is the mind movement. And we know what movement feels like. And we also know what stillness feels like. So we have a more enhanced possibility of being able to choose the stillness or the movement, because both can be appropriate. So we're utilizing our movement practice of walking in this way. I'm going to give you the specific instruction in just a moment. But first, we need to take another series of vows, if you're willing to do so. And this is around acknowledging that our mind so often moves to a kind of a critical self-appraisal. And so the invitation is to take vows of renunciation for the length of this retreat around our judging mind, our comparing mind, and our fixing mind. So these are tendencies of mind. They're not absolute. Each of us is characterized by some habitual pattern of each of these. Judging is when we go, oh, this was a good sit or bad sit. I'm a good yogi. I'm a bad yogi. Comparing is, this was better than last time. All these other people on the screen are better at practice than I am. Everybody else is understanding what he's talking about, but I don't. The Buddha was so cautious about comparing mind that he said, do not consider in relation to better than or worse than or even the same as. So he said, stay out of the neighborhood of comparing mind. There is discernment, but discernment is seeing how things are. It can look like you're using judging and comparing because you are utilizing the start of that, but it's where it ends up. So discernment knows this is skillful or unskillful. And it sees possibility, but it doesn't go good, bad. I'm a good, bad yogi, or I'm less than or more than someone else. It's not for that purpose. It is for skillful means to be onward leading, once again, using that phrase. And then the final of these three renunciations that we're taking is that of engaging, indulging in, succumbing to, collapsing in regard to fixing mind. So we're sitting there and our posture maybe wasn't perfect, but then we get to fixating on our property, our posture. Like, oh, well, maybe if I got a little more straight, then I would really have a good set. Oh, you know, but I remember the last retreat, I could do that, but I can't seem to do that right now. Oh, well, I want to fix it. Oh, because everybody else is, you know, doing and on. We want to fix things. We think if we can just fix it, our practice is going to be so much better. And so we get lost in a kind of movement of fixing. So the mind's moving towards judging, it's moving towards comparing, or it's moving towards fixing rather than just here, now. This is, the mind's like this, here and now. Through the various sense gates are unfolding in this moment, and I'm observing them all in relation to choiceless awareness, or if the breath is my object, I'm staying with the unfolding experience of the breath here, now. There's movement, but the known knowing is still. fixing gets in the way of that. Judging gets in the way of that. Comparing gets in the way of that. So I'm going to ask you, insofar as you choose, just for the purpose of this retreat, only in regard to retreat experience, you can judge your other experience as much or as little as possible that you want to do. So we're going to, if you will, put your hands together. And again, you're just trying this out. For the duration of this retreat, say in your head, I renounce judging mind as best I am able. For the duration of this retreat, I renounce comparing mind as best I am able. For the duration of this retreat, I renounce fixing mind as best I am able. You can think of these renunciations as protection vows. It's like the cord you get, it said, well, what are these protection cords for? Well, to protect us from ourselves, of course. And so it is with these renunciations, where we're not being mean to ourselves in any way. We're not denying experience, but we're choosing wholesome experience, that right effort of the Eightfold Path. It's reflected in this approach to life. This brings me to the thing about what does one do in regard to interactions with your family there at home. And so as far as possible, you would try to hold to, as best I am able, I am not going to judge, my teenager being very inconsiderate of others or whatever it may be in your instance. Your meeting experience, you're utilizing your retreat experience to let it be a resource to you in your daily flow there in your circumstances. Many of us live alone, but some of us are in some sort of a dyad situation with at least one more person, and some in multi-person home life as we do this retreat. Back to what are the precepts you want to follow? I would invite you to imagine that you're going to give up political reading for 3 days, political watching, give up your phone, just like we would take your phone on retreat, to not use your phone to get stimulation that makes the mind move a lot and without choice. And I would also suggest that you give up TV or streaming or whatever form you're using that you would in ordinary life be doing on a weekend. But here, what you're doing is being on retreat, so that you really limit anything that stimulates you that's outside. The one exception being whatever's appropriate in terms of meeting the needs of your family or people you're living with.